So one of my favorite quotes around teams is from Stephen Covey. And he said, and this really hit me, like parted my hair one day. The whole point of a team is to leverage each other's strengths so that our weaknesses become irrelevant. And we tend to, as managers and leaders, if we're not really careful, really focus on the weaknesses. So it's on us, as Tiffany talks about so often, to make sure that we have purpose-driven leadership, that we know what we're doing and why we're doing it, that we have a strategy for growth, that we really can articulate and define that with our team, that we have a compelling culture. People actually want to work here. We want to manage and mentor in really positive, constructive ways so that people feel the benefit of that and appreciate and value it. And then we want to make sure, just like you have, we want to make sure that our teams are clear on the compensation and the career opportunities available to them. And one of the biggest mistakes here is if I asked any of you, if I said, Adam, Alan, Joe, Hannah, how do you make more money? You would know. You'd be like, I find some new clients and my revenue goes up. Your team, how do you make more money? Right. So that's where getting clear about that growth path, what they need to do to contribute in ways that you can feel good about giving them more career opportunity and compensation, right? So that we're growing together. So there's really the five areas that we want to spend a little bit of time covering with you today as you think about building and managing your teams.
Yeah. And where we start with that is in that purpose-driven leadership is defining values. So Jared and I really think about this in a couple of ways. We have our internal mission, which is we want to create an environment where talented people can thrive. And that's really like, what are we doing? Like, what's our decision point? It happens in like, as easy as like benefits. Is that benefit going to help our people thrive? Or how, you know, what, how is that going to weigh? And then we have our values, and that values is like, what's the journey that we want to be on together in a way that we all feel really good? And how do we define those as a team? And so we utilize our values. We have them weekly. We do a value shout out. It's also built into our team, like one-to-one check-in system. So we have a text system now that kind of creates more connection as we become more virtual. We do value shout out in there. We create an award at the end of the year that's who's shown up in our values and contributed to the team. It's peer nominated. And then ultimately we make the decision not to put that on our team. But what this has really done is as we've gotten clear about the values and we've really integrated those into our culture, our team is very happy on the journey that they're in. And when there is any sort of misalignment with like a value that's going on, it's a much easier conversation to have because we've normalized that we're living to these values and having those conversations. And so it's really created a culture that we are feeling really great about. And they are defining on the front end of what we're looking from hiring and training, and then they're seen through all the way. These have been important questions that have been asked in interviews, and we've had potential candidates be like, the fact that you can even answer the question differentiates you.
Yep. If you have mission, vision, values, right, models that show people what your firm is about, how you operate, what your approach is, you will, to Tiffany's point, be ahead of 90 to 95% of the population, because most firms, even big billion-dollar firms that call us, haven't all done this work, or they've done it in fits and starts, and they haven't done it in the way that we've really worked with Tiff and Jared to do. And they've just executed so beautifully as just consistent, reliable processes, making the hard stuff, making the soft stuff hard. So Tiffany shared, like, they have very specific processes they've built out. All those examples are in the library related to this lesson, right? Performance reviews and culture reviews and PIPs and check-ins and all of those things. Here's why it's important. The foxhole. You are a founder of a small business. I shared a story about what I was dealing with for the last few days. We all have those stories consistently. You need the most important thing in any business. I love process and platforms because they create leverage. But the thing that I have learned is that people are the most important ingredient because they're the ones that use the processes and the platforms. They're the ones that apply it. So whether it's a part-time assistant 5 hours a week or a team of 15 is irrelevant. When you are clear on your vision and values, it becomes guardrails for everything that you do, right? You all know, like, we're going through staff transitions here at Limitless. You can find people who have good capabilities, but are they a cultural fit? when someone pushes back and says, I don't believe that person reached out to me, it breaks the chain of command. Can you imagine me having a chain of command in my firm? Like a chain of command? Like, this is military. This isn't everybody's in it to win it together, right? So it's those things that you really want to define as you build teams. If it's you and a part-time assistant, it's a lot easier. But if you're building teams, you really want to create a set of operating guardrails. We have, on more than one occasion, Tiffany has done the same thing over the years, let people go, not because they didn't have the technical capabilities, but because they didn't have the cultural alignment to treat clients or the team or their work with the level of dignity, performance, and values that we wanted them to. And that's just not a compromise we're willing to make, right? Tiffany and Jared have gone through a lot of changes aligning people to values. So sometimes that's the hardest part, setting a cultural norm with those values and then holding people to it. And as Tiffany and Jared have done, a really good job of actually making the soft stuff hard, baking these values into your performance reviews, into your team meetings, into your planning. So it's not just some like cute little thing that you say. It really is the governing set of principles by which you drive your firm forward. And so when you think about choosing your leadership style, this is a really important thing. So we shared at our leaders retreat earlier this year, McKinsey did some really cool research in a book called CEO Excellence, where I outlined the six mindsets, right, of really excellent leaders. And one of the things that they've determined is that really excellent leaders are quite intentional, like super intentional. And so we'll have this command and control style. I know this because I recover from it constantly. What the hell happened here? Why didn't you just do it this way? If I would have done this, what else got messed up? Like, let me just tell you how to fix it. That is a command and control leadership style. And it's good at being directive, but it's not very good for developing people because you're not creating space for them to learn how to sit in the space and think like you and make those same decisions. On the other side, and this is where I think Tiff and Jared are just so excellent, is it's a very collaborative style. And Tiffany can talk about this. Like, there's those fine lines where you want to be collaborative and you want to give people free rein and freedom to figure it out, but then you have to backstop it with accountability, because if you don't, it can get abused. And so you've got to put some guardrails around it. So one of the things we've talked about, you all know that I coached Michael Kitsis. We were just having this conversation last week around things, is there's a difference between command and control, power, explaining, telling, I'm smart, I know the answer, and mentoring. And the difference is curiosity. Saying, hey, you should have done it this way because, is entirely different than saying, our goal is to make sure clients feel X. As you reflect on this situation, where was that a breakdown? And if you were the client, how would you have liked us to handle it differently? Forces the person in that situation to think about the breakdown, take some ownership for it, think about how they sit in that space. And then when they do, they actually build new neural pathways. If we just keep telling people what they did wrong and how they should have done it like us, we deny them the benefit of that actual growth experience. Now, I don't know about you guys, I'm not the most patient person, right? So sitting in the space of explaining and taking, I'm like, I have it in my head. I want a Vulcan mind meld, Spock right to you. I want you to know it and I want you to go. And I figured out that Chisnet does not work. It just doesn't. I've tried every way from Sunday. Tiff's tried it. Jared's tried it. This is where we really have to invest in putting structures in place to support our people strategy. So here are those six mindsets. If you want to pick up the book, CEO Excellence, it's a great read and it applies to all of you. What McKinsey has determined is these are the six mindsets that lead to good leadership performance. They've also determined that leadership performance, AKA you and your mindset, are you ready for this, is responsible for 70% of your success. Your ability to set a bold direction, right? Like, what's the goal? Can I be clear? Can I commit? Can I just decide to do what I dang need to do to make it happen? Can I sit in those challenging moments and make those bold decisions when it's scary and uncertain, right? That's what Limitless is all about, is stepping over those setbacks to get to that next level of success. Alignment. We just talked about this. You've got to treat the soft stuff as hard. So we'll show you how Tiff and Jared have applied that concept in their firm with real structures. You've got to solve for the team psychology. You've got to get them aligned, invested, and engaged. Otherwise, you all know you are working uphill in the snow, both ways, trying to get your people on board. And it's the most exhausting, frustrating part of what we do. We get mad at tech, but we get really frustrated with people because we don't understand why they don't just behave the way we want them to behave. And it's because we have to create the conditions that are the cause and effect for that kind of behavior. We want to engage them, make sure they're helping engage, right? We talk about involvement equals investment all the time. Connection, Tiff will tell you as she shares examples, they're constantly going back and starting with why. When we had them start their whole staff reset after they were taking over the firm from Darren's dad, the starting point of that conversation was stand in front of the team and say, I'm sorry, we messed up. We could have done a better job. Here's why that happened. And here's why we need to fix it going forward. And that's not the easiest thing to do as a leader, but man, they stood there with such authenticity and integrity. And over the next few years, continued to show up that way. And Tiff will tell you the results have been really incredible for their team. And then effectiveness, this was where it all started. Tiff and Jared were solving all their managers' problems and doing all of their jobs because when things didn't go right, it got pushed up to them and they stepped in and fixed it. And so the shift has really been building the right team and empowering that team to be clear, transparent, and accountable, the model we talk about all the time. So that instead of doing the job, they could elevate people into doing the job through that mentorship and management approach. So those are the six mindsets that really show up as you think about how you lead your organization going forward. You're going to choose your company culture, right? Unraveling, disorganized, anything goes, right? My first firm for many years, we called it 11th hour enterprises. Why did we call it 11th hour enterprises? Because that's when everything got done in the 11th hour. And then one day I was like, well, this is silly. I'm a business consultant. It should go the other way. Now the shift is to teamwork, accountability, organized systems, structures, and confidence. Can you have the discernment and the discipline to put the systems in place to leverage people to the utmost, right? If I manage it, I'm going it alone. I'm undisciplined. I'm attacking the problem in a frenzied and like, I've got a problem, go solve it. How many times have we been there? We drop everything and we go. We want to move to a place of discernment instead of reaction. We want to go the right way. We want to be intentional, clear, calm, and confident. And when we have a problem, we want to stop and say, if I take the time, these are the takeaways. Here's how I need to solve this with the team. So that's just sort of an attitudinal approach to you as a leader. So step one is, can you sit in the space and be really clear and conscious about your leadership style? Have you created the vision and the purpose and the values that people can really align with? And then as we go through this, are you building the team and the systems in a way that give them a track to really run on? Tiff, do you want to talk a little bit about how teams evolve and the experience you guys have gone through?
Yeah, so the ways that teams evolve, right? Like you can start with like, what's that first person? Once you really know above the energy or, you know, above the line work, below the line work, where's going to give you the greatest operational leverage? Like then you're looking at your first hire. What does that look like? For most advisors, that tends to be on the operational side, right? You're getting your right hand, the other session going on really what's going to create those leverages for you, getting paperwork off the table, like getting certain things and managing the CRM, like those types of things. And then it's like, okay, now we're growing and I really want to work with these types of clients. How do I get that secondary advisor seat? Sometimes those are flopped. Sometimes they're the same person. A lot of times they are two different people. And then you're starting to grow into maybe these ensemble practices where you're like, okay, now we have some defined teams and I'm looking now to maybe take a more of a CEO rainmaker seat or those types of things. And I'm going to create these teams that are now leading a majority of the client servicing aspects and the clients. And then over time, getting to that enterprise level where it's, you know, a bunch of teams and a lot of centralization of things. So for us, we're kind of in between that. And so we are an ensemble that looks and works as like an enterprise in some ways. We've looked to centralize a lot of things because that's where we're going to get the operational excellence that, and on the path and the vision that we're on and the outcomes that we're seeking as a team. So we have client operations centralized. So any sort of account maintenance, any sort of paperwork, first line of calls to the clients, anything that they need there. So they're doing all of that. And then we have investments centralized. We have financial planning. And then we have our advice and relationship, our lead advisors. On the other side, we have growth centralized. You're kind of looking at it right now, but we look at that in four categories as well. And so I do marketing, onboarding of new clients, branding, and then a level of client experience in there as well that is all focused in on growth and creating opportunities and growth. And then we have kind of what I like to say the connective tissue between the two, which is our technology and full assessment there, our team experience, our employee experience, finance and compliance. So we look at those and they're like, those all could be career paths. Those all could be individual seats. They could, some of them are co-seats. But as a firm, we're really looking as that's where we're going to get the most leverage and create a lot of flexibility internally that creates a lot of opportunities for our team, gives our clients a deeper bench of experience and skill and excellence coming to the table, as well as for us, it's creating a whole new level of leverage. So it's been really great. We started kind of in that diamond team model, and we took out basically that center piece of the diamond and moved that into its own centralization, financial planning. And that's been helpful.
Yeah, and we can talk a little bit, and we've got a couple of slides that really show that difference. The thing I want you to really all to take away from that, because this is the exercise to an extent we did with Tiff and Jared in the beginning, is in a firm, especially as you build up into that ensemble, right, or into that larger model, you're going to draw a line down the middle of the firm. And on one line, right, it's what's going to happen at a centralized level, and then what's going to happen in a decentralized level. And by that, I mean, what's happening at the team level, the advisor team level, and then what's happening at the organizational level. And what Tiffany was talking about is a lot of firms, and this is true for many of you, have the advisors running, planning, investments, right? And then they'll have a team model with support people running those operations. And that is an effective model. Some of you have the diamond team model. I know Angie well, we talk about it all the time. What we're really seeing is firms shift for a lot of reasons, and we'll talk about the particulars in a moment, is centralizing even more of the relationship, right? The financial planning, et cetera, the way that we've done investments, because as we'll talk about in a moment, there's a lot more leverage in that if you're a big enough firm. If you're not there yet, you can still use those team models. But it's really about if you are the firm's greatest revenue producing asset, which most of you are, I want you to imagine that this is your work life. This is your circle of everything that has to be done to run a firm. And there's a lot of slices in this pie. We have a worksheet that's got about 8 of them, right? Customer service, marketing, et cetera. Sheena, if I said to you, 0 is I have no leverage here. I do it myself. I have 0 leverage when it comes to speaking. I am the person that speaks on behalf of Limitless, right? So if there was a speaking under the marketing category, right, I would have a 0. If it was, you know, operationals on the website, like over here, I'd be at a 10. A 10 is I have complete leverage. I don't even have to touch it for it to happen. Now, I want you to all think about your firms through the lens of this. And then I want you to imagine in operations, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 in complete leverage? Right? It's probably not 0 and it's probably not 10. Like Sheena, maybe she's at a 4. Hey, we get over here to marketing. We're going to give marketing a general category for this purpose. Maybe she's at a 5, you know, maybe she's at a 2. It's still really dependent on her. You can slice your marketing into smaller pieces, right? Your marketing, your digital, your blog, right? And that's how you elevate each section. But let's use it at a 2. Hey, you know what? Account openings and operations, I have nothing to do with it. Most of the time, I'm in an 8. If you go around your wheel, in 99% of the cases, if you plot each area of the business on a scale of 1 to 10 from a pure leverage standpoint, and then you connect the dots. I did this with leaders last year in one of our retreats. That's what it looks like most of the time. If you connect those dots. If that were a wagon wheel, how would it run? Painful, peer. Yeah, that's your life. That's why it feels the way that it feels, ladies and gentlemen, because Sheena's going from a 2 where it's all about her to, oh, I don't have anything to do with that, to, oh, I'm over here at a 4. I got to go back here and I got to solve this thing over here because I'm not at an 8 yet over there. I got a weak team. Like all of those pieces are why it feels like, oh, I got to get over this hump and then I got to solve this thing and then something works and then it doesn't. I want you, the invitation, however you structure your firms, which we're going to dig into a bit, I want you to think about your leverage wheel. When we talk about your genius focused work, which we know is even elevating further with technology, and we think about the things that you do, I want you to imagine your ideal wheel. Where are you? Because there's real things where you will not, unless you build a bigger enterprise, you will always be in a certain role. You'll always be in the CEO role or the CMO role or whatever it is. If you map this out, the goal is to grow in a concentric circle so that it's nice and smooth. We just don't tend to do that. If you do this exercise, what you'll see is where your leverage weaknesses are. Is it on the advice side? Is it on the marketing side? Is it on the managing side? Is it in operations? So that you can start to tend to the areas that need attention as you think about the team model that's going to work best for you. So that's a high level strategic exercise. Here are some examples. And again, there's loads of resources in the library in samples, but to Tiffany's point, what I want you to do before you decide your team model, and this is the exercise Tiffany will tell you, she and Jared and I, it was a couple of years ago, we're in the conference room and we're on the whiteboard planning out the org chart. And they're like, hey, we're doing this. And I'm like, have we thought about this? And step one is, if you were to hit your goal, if you were to double or triple or 5X or 10X, you know, we love big goals, but you don't have to have them. That might be time. Let's just use 2X as an example. Joe, if you were to double, Samantha, Harold, if you were to double, you would double your, without any change, you would double your staff, you would double your rate, your expenses, you double the time, you double the services, you will double the headaches, all of it. Is anybody here want to double all that? No. So now what we have to look at is how do we create efficiency gains? So if we take our org chart and we plot it out and we're going to end up with a revenue per employee, maybe it's 250, maybe it's 400. We're going to end up with a revenue per advisor. Our goal is to plot that out, then plot out the goal model, and then really look at it through the lens of what kind of gains do we want to create? If our revenue per advisor is 500 and we want it to be a million, now we know how what kind of productivity we have to build into the team to get there so we can start to look at the models that are actually going to make the most sense for us. So there's a key performance indicator worksheet in the library that walks you through just your high-level data around the team. There are some sample org charts, but the idea is to really look at it through the lens of if I doubled it or tripled it, would I want it that way? The answer is usually no. And then we have to think about how to recast that team in a way that gets us the results that we want. So there's different ways to do it, right? There's solos. You guys are very familiar with that. Solo practice with the service advisor. I still consider that a lifestyle practice until you start getting into partnerships and equity and multi, right? 3+ advisors. You can have a lifestyle practice with a trusted service advisor and a trusted assistant. And you can get up to $1.5 million or $2 million in revenue, depending on the size of your clients. You can have a really nice practice. You don't have to build that ensemble with advisor teams, but as many of you have made that choice, it really becomes about how do we structure those teams in the near term? And with growth, this is what Tiffany and Jared went through. How do we restructure those teams to create greater productivity gains and greater value? And that's where we are seeing a shift to more centralized models. So whereas Tiffany and Jared were in, are moving to Diamond Team, the recommendation that we made was that they actually move to a centralized director of financial planning. And here's why. When you hire advisors and you put them on teams, they have to know the advice, they have to know the investments, they have to keep up with planning, they have to go to conferences, they have to meet with clients, they have to do all of that. If you have a director of financial planning that's centralized, then that person becomes the central repository for that knowledge and disperses it across the teams. It does not mean your advisors don't need their CE. It doesn't mean they don't have to be technically competent. It means they actually get to sit not doing that factory work around the plans. They actually get to sit across and deliver the outputs to the client and have conversations. Here's where it's cool from a growth perspective. Advisors are harder to find. And they're getting more and more expensive, and that's probably not going to change in the near term. If your financial planning director gets busy, who do you hire behind them? Financial planning assistant or a paraplanner. If your advisor's spending a third of their time doing that stuff and they get busy, you have to hire another advisor team. So by centralizing some of those, for some of you, as you get to larger sizes, there's a lot more scale in centralizing, right? At that 3 million plus mark, there becomes a lot more scale in centralizing even the financial planning pieces of it. So that's the general evolution that most of you will go through at some level. It's about where you want to fall in that process. Did I skip one? Oh, here we go. No. Tiff, you want to add just a little bit about how you guys have gone through that and how the centralization has helped you, just because I think it's an important point.
Yeah, the centralization has just been so incredible for our team. Everyone's truly sitting in a seat. Right before we went to a very clear centralized model, mm-hmm. I asked my team as a leader, I said, who in a team building event, I said, who here feels like they're in a seat of catch all? And no joke, a team of 10, I think we were 14 at the time, a team of 14, every single person raised their hand. And Jared and I were just like, oh God, we have a team of 14. And they all felt as if they were in a catch-all seat, which meant we are A-plus people doing C stuff, because we're doing everything for everything in different ways. And so we really came to like, what are the 1 to 2 things that those seats should be focused on and everything else, and really start creating guardrails around that and having really strong systems and transparency. And so that's what we did. It took probably 6 to 9 months for that truly to get into effect, but like, we have capacity right now having centralized. We have teams who are loving their, like team members just loving their seat, because it's just so clear. It's consistent. They're doing it day to day, and we have leverage. And for the last 6 months, I have now a team of 13 that was just, we are now 13, but the team just, we were all just working in our own ways, trying to make this work. We're together, and there's momentum and there's capacity. And in this last team building event, once again, everyone set growth goals for the firm because their seat has availability and space for them to think. They're delivering consistently. They have the systems that support them. And when everyone's in a catch-all seat, all they're thinking about is like, what's going to get me through this today? So the centralization has shifted us in a really big way. And we're loving, we've centralized growth. So right now that is with me, and we'll create the next level of seats there. But like, I'm the onboarding specialist. So I get clients to prospects to get to client agreement, and then I hand them off to the advisors, and that's going really well. I used to have a ton of head trash around that, like, oh my gosh, what if they get attached to me, or what if this, or what if that, and what if I hand it off, and my brand and my personal brand's on the line, and all of those things. And it's so great. Our team's so happy because they don't want to be salespeople; they just want to do all the planning. I love it, and I'm like, what a cool seat for anybody to think about. Like, you get to uncover all of somebody's needs, deliver all this value, right? Like, there's so much value in the sales process when you're uncovering, and you get to create that roadmap. And then you get to hand them off to a team that loves to consistently deliver on that value over and over and over again. Me, I'm like, we signed that thing, and I'm like, awesome. Like, give me the next opportunity. And there's people out there that are like that, and they love that. And I'm like, an onboarding specialist is a heck of a role. So we get to continue to grow in a way. And not only that, but as an owner, the value creation there, because it's so enduring, and every seat has its purpose, but not every seat, like, you're creating some security and stability in the centralization and value creation as a firm, but we're loving it. It's created so much capacity. It's put everyone in a really good seat, and it's really pushing us forward in a momentous way.
Yeah. And the thing that's really important to note is, even if you're not at that size or scale yet, as you move along this evolution, this space between the ensemble and the enterprise is where most of you are. And now we're really looking at, if you think about the typical model, to Tiffany's point, doing a lot of drawing today, right? You've got all the things that in the advisor role we do for clients, and it's planning and investments and advice and all the op stuff that's get escalated. And so for each client, we'll be working on each of those things. What you really want to do when you move to that ensemble, irrespective of how far you move right to the enterprise, is now we have vertical roles. So instead of people working horizontally, now we have a client, and now up here it's rainmaking and funding, and then we just tag different people. So Tiffany is sitting in that lane for every one of the clients. The advisor is sitting in the advice lane. The planners are sitting in the planning lane. As you're making that transition, if you don't have 13 people, right? If you've got 4, you're not necessarily going to hire a director of planning next or an onboarding specialist. that's the work that I want you to think about doing, is how do we take those horizontal roles and start to carve out slices? So if you're not at a director of planning level, and but you're thinking about hiring the next advisor, could you be thinking about hiring a paraplanner or an onboarding specialist instead of the next advisor, and then pulling those tasks off of the one or two or three advisors you have? Now they get to delegate or downsize the things that are not necessarily energy creating or revenue producing for them. You're typically transitioning those tasks to a lower cost, higher viability, like easier to hire, train, and replicate than advisors. It's the hardest role to train and replicate, and it's going to not get any easier. Hiring a planner or an analyst or a service person or an ops person or an onboarding specialist, right, is typically easier, and right, you can leverage that a lot more. So again, not, you're not all moving into that centralized everything model, but Tiffany and I really wanted to have that conversation with you about getting really clear about how you turn your horizontals into verticals, and how through each lane for financial planning, what's step one? Level one is you're not doing any plan input. Level two is your advisors aren't doing any plan input, even if it's a paraplanner or an outsource function. Level three is you have someone who's dedicated to that at a manager or director level. So I just want to be clear, there are levels by which you ease in. You're just moving up the career ladder, right? Start with a planning assistant, move to a paraplanner. When you get the size or scale, you hire that director of planning. So does that help you guys understand? Like, again, you're not all the size that Tiffany and Jared are, but it's the same model for turning those horizontal roles into more vertical specialties to the degree that you can. This is where virtual contract and part-time workers in this new digital world are actually cool, because you can go out and get a part-time person or a marketing specialist via Upwork to do those things in a part-time capacity in a way that 10 years ago was very hard to do. To get an outsourced paraplanner, there are real resources available. You might have to find the right one. You might have to get on a waiting list. But 10 years ago, that was hard. Now, if you give it 90 to 6, like, you'll find a good resource. So that's the conversation there, is as you sit in that ensemble space and you add advisors and advisor teams, be really thoughtful about the strategy and the structure by which you add them, because then they're going to start doing a bunch of work and you're going to build an entire business model around it. We've got your typical model, right? Client in the center, you've got an advisor, a wealth coordinator, right? A planner. You're all very familiar with that. Diamond teams, my friend Angie is right, espoused this concept. It works really well. I actually had a conversation with her over breakfast about it last year. The only issue I really have with the diamond teams, and Tiffany and I talked about this as well, is if you're growing into them, it's much harder than if you've got a big firm that just has a bunch of advisors doing stuff with a bunch of staff, and then you build those vertical teams. So if you've got a 3 million plus firm and a lot of clients, you can really implement that diamond team model. If you're growing, some of those evolutionary issues, right? What if you don't have as many clients? What if the service advisor grows faster than the lead advisor? Like, so those are just things to be managed. So just keep that in mind. And then on the right, you've got more of that. And this used to be reserved for enterprises. And now what we're saying is it's not reserved for enterprises anymore. We now have access to people and structures where we can fill out our org chart in more of that like specialized vertical leveraged way without having necessarily a team of 13 people until you grow into it. So we really like to have that conversation about centralizing as many of those services, again, depending on the level, right? 1, 2, or 3, based on the size that you're at. If I can click the button here. Tiff, do you want to talk a little bit about how you've walked your, like how you've built the model around this?
Yeah, so we did make that shift, as you can see from like, we had like the three advisors that were kind of operating into really helping the client. We pulled client ops out of that and moved that into its own, like the account services team, where they're opening all the accounts, their money movement, they're just consistently in those details. We actually found that helped a ton, because when you swap from just all of those tasks into like deep planning work, where you're then going to go present to the client, like it's such a mind shift and such a work shift that our account services, I think in our time studies, they can have up to like 350 households or something like that, where it's like no issue, because so they can operate under two or three of our leading teams, because that's all they're doing daily. And they love it. It's like, I want to be the one that knows all of the clients and have that first phone call. Like, it's, you know, the consistency of working with our custodian and building a relationship with them has helped us a lot, because we have one person in that seat who they're consistently talking to. And so they know all of those back levers behind the scenes, versus trying to have a team of, you know, when we had all the catch-alls, they all have a different service person that they talk to at the custodian. They all understand the information differently. And in order to really create that leverage, it was like, how do we get to a place of, as a firm, how are we approaching this? What's our take on Roth IRA conversions? Like, as a firm, when are we going to put in those benchmarks? When are we going to look at those for the clients? Well, our financial planning department, now that they have time, because they're also not in front of the clients, doing all of the work and taking all of those client emails that are coming in, they're in that place to think, okay, I'm going to do all of the research, create our approach. And when one of these things happen, it can move over to us. We take care of that and we push it back for you to go and present that to the clients. So what we're getting and what we've learned is we're getting a lot of consistency. We have three separate teams, and two of them are focused in on our 50 plus clients that are nearing or in retirement. And the other one's focused on entrepreneurs. Very different, but there's a lot of things that we can do consistently as a firm. And so we're like, how do we get to that place of like, we don't have our individual advisors running it on their philosophy, that we've created a shared philosophy and approach to anything that we're doing from a financial planning, investment management perspective. So we've just gained a lot of leverage out of this. And not only that, but it's creating so many more roles and opportunities for our team to grow into. You can start to see where maybe somebody thinks they like one position a lot. You can start to see strengths in another and possibly movement there. So it's been really, really great overall.
Yep. And again, Tiffany and Jared's examples and job descriptions and career letters and like that's all in the library for you to go and reference and see how they've applied it more specifically. One of the things we did was really look at managing teams, not just through pure compensation, but through the actual team. Like if we have three advisor teams and we allocate revenue and cost to those teams, how is each of those teams performing? And this is one of the things that we see a lot in ensemble firms with multi-advisor teams is in many cases, I would say in 80 to 90%, the principal or the founder or the partner has, right, we might have three advisors and $500,000 revenue per advisor, but we really have 1.2 million with the founder and 200,000 with the next person and $500,000, you know, as they're learning. And so it's really biased in terms of actual advisor productivity. And again, as you're hiring and expanding, right, and training people into either service advisor or senior advisor in rainmaking roles, that's going to be part of the process. You just want an intentional way to get clear and manage that. So one of the tools that I would really encourage you all to use is our team revenue modeler, where you put in the key data and then it breaks down those expenses by team so that you can see how each team's performing. And you can look at your team and say, hey, I need to start transferring assets to these teams to get each of those teams more independently, right, able to sustain and support themselves. For many of you, that will be the goal. Right. So we want to look at it through that lens if you want. Right. So that's the clarity, transparency, accountability part. And then we start putting management in place to hold teams to those levels, whether it's service modeling, right, sustaining the service model or growing and rainmaking. We start to put tracking and reporting in place. And Tiff and Jared and some of our other leaders have done to make sure that we're holding our teams accountable and the firm knows what it needs to do to support those teams to get the economics where it needs to relative to the client experience. So that resource is in there and I would encourage you all to use it. All right, so that's just a good, hopefully a good overview of kind of the key tenets of leadership, crafting an intentional team strategy, really thinking about how you build that team. Again, there are more lessons and resources. There's also an entire lesson on compensation. So we're not going to dive deep into it today, but Tiff and I felt like we couldn't have a conversation about building and managing teams without at least giving you the overview. And then you can dive into that deeper lesson and we can talk with you about how to apply it. One, you're going to have some kind of base package salary that's gone up in most cases of late. In many cases, you'll have performance-based compensation or bonuses. recognition, that's the above and beyond. That might be perks, special treats, to Tiffany's point, right? Trips, celebrations, like there's even little stuff, right? Flowers, I send when my team gets sick, we send them like, you know, chicken soup packets from Amazon. Like they love it. Like little things like that say that you actually care and you're trying to create a culture that, right, supports and edifies them. And I think people appreciate that. Actual benefits, right, are really a big deal. Those other perks, gem memberships, right? Limitless has a complete flex time policy, right? You can do your work at 12 o'clock at night. If you need to take your kids to Little League for 4 hours, just make sure your actual, right, team meetings or clients are being taken care of. That's a huge perk for our team. 4 out of 5 people on our team are single moms, right? So to have that kind of flexibility is huge for them as a right function of compensation. And then obviously really good people want growth opportunity. So again, there's a whole lesson on managing performance, compensation, and career paths that you can dive into if you want to go deeper there. But we wanted to just give you the overview on compensation and career pathing. And Tiffany, and we've worked a lot with Destiny and EA over the last couple of years, and Tiffany's done a great job of putting this in place. Tiff, you want to walk everyone through that structure for the next couple of slides?
Yeah, absolutely. So career pathing has been definitely, it's important. I would say this has been probably the area where it's been least clear to us as we were moving more in from that previous structure into the centralization structure and how important it is to our team. That has been an area where, you know, we have lost an employee in the past just based off of just not having clarity around that, because growth is really important to everyone. So just ensuring that you have having taken the time to think about somebody's career set, having set parameters and when you're going to talk about that. It's also really hard when they come to you every month and they're like, I feel like I should be in this position. And you're like, man, there's so much more than feelings that we need to discuss here. So like having like a total structure around like skill set and experience and like true path. And there's this level of, again, we're not building the firm to support our team. We've certainly made promotions where it was like, oh, we really like them as a person, but the firm's not there, but we'll make it stretch, you know? And that was making a decision on trying to be that people side and that we'll get there versus being like, you know what? I understand that you want to grow and you're in a place that you're ready for that next step. As a firm, we're just not there. Sometimes timing is just not going to work out. And or there's opportunities, right? You can get creative with maybe some interim steps or something that it can be a little bit more satisfying. This is the curiosity piece, like really digging into the whys or what's mattering or what's coming up in their life that could be pushing that in a different way. But being really, really clear on that path. We do have a path to equity. We think that, you know, as a firm, like that is a very clear vision of ours. I think that's, you know, what we're starting with in Limitless. Like, what's your goal as a firm? For us, like, we really think equity changes lives. We would love for our employees to move, our team to move up and become partners over time. And we needed to create that path. Is partner just managing, you know, a book of clients? Well, for us, it's a little bit different than that. Like there is people in operations with, like, I'm not managing clients. I'm in the growth side, but like, you know, what does that look like? So really being clear on like, you know, what does IP look like that you're contributing to the firm? You know, what are your parameters around continuing to work here for years? Like, how are you culturally leading or contributing to the team? Like, we're not going to create, that's why those values are so important. There's a value component to hitting partner. And if you're falling short on one of those values, you're not going to hit partner. And so those are really important pieces. And then of course, over time, we have like the path to that where like, when do they start getting more access to partner meetings and they get to come in and sit in and start listening. And then when do they get access to the financials, you know, the finances at a deeper point so that they can start exploring, is this an investment that they want to make personally? Because it's not just a like reward. It's not just exciting. And people, it's amazing how many team members want to come in and they're like, I want to be an owner. And then you're like, that's great.
Here's what's required.
And here's like the liabilities that you're taking on. They're like, oh man.
Yeah, because, maybe I don't. The risk-reward relationship. Yeah.
Totally. And that's something like the money side can be worked out. And so you really have to think about like adding a partner creates liabilities and differential things. And if it's purely based on a compensation thing, like you can create compensation that doesn't involve providing equity. Yeah. So you really want to continue to get clear with your team, help them explore and understand that, help us. And for us, it's why we are very clear on that it is a buy-in. There's no gifting of shares, like, because you think differently and do differently as a partner in that and all those things. So those are just like, establish your criteria. What does that look like? We base all of our positions and compensation philosophy off the investment news study that comes out every year. We give our team access to that investment news study because that's taking away the feelings around compensation. It's like, here's your position, studies across the nation. Here's where we're benchmarking it to. Here's why it's median versus first quartile or third quartile. If you guys have questions around that, let's have a conversation. But it's really helped us by having clear, defined standards on compensation, their roles and responsibility, right? What are the 2 to 3 things you need to be doing every quarter? And then your anything past that is gravy, and we can work through those rewards. And then what's that path to partnership? And where are we at a firm to even offer that path to partnership? And we're just really gotten to the point of just super transparent and super honest about where we're at, because it has to, the business is the Northern Star that supports all of us. And so those are things that we've put in place, and the more structure we've had around it, and just, it's more information data driven. Everybody's so much more open to that feedback, and we have really constructive conversations.
And there's an example of the, right, a sample career letter here. I'll show you Tiffany's and Jerry's in a moment. There's a lot of samples in the libraries, right? Different firms. Here's what's important. This is a really good model to work off of. You'll see Tiff and Jared's here's in a second. Here's why they are so valuable, because what tends to happen is people have ideas in their head about what they want and what they deserve. And you have ideas in their head about what you want to give and what you deserve and what you need, as they do. We're all just trying to get our needs met. If we don't create a clear and common language about how their compensation increases with their contribution, it's a giant question mark. And I've never met a human that likes that kind of question mark. Julie knows how Julie makes more money. Samantha knows how she makes more money. Ryan, you and Ron know how you make more money, right? You go get new clients, the money shows up in the bank. For your teams, it feels like what tends to happen, I've heard this hundreds of times, like, hey, it's been a year. People are sitting across from me and saying, I deserve X because my butt's been in the chair for another 365 days. And then you're in the uncomfortable position of deciding whether to give them what they think they deserve and need or not. There's no objective middle party. It's just you being the good guy or the bad guy. And if you have good people and good relationships, it usually goes well. But we've all had tension points where there was a misalignment of expectations. If we put it in writing and say, this is what a level one advisor does, and this is what the pay range is, in order to move to level two, you must be able to do these things, manage this much independently. In order to move to level three, you have to have generated $250,000 in revenue so that we know you actually have some skills in that area. Whether it's the paraplanner, the advisor, the ops manager, if you can create a common sheet, right, that language that everyone can speak from, then what happens is now you're managing from how do we succeed together. You're sitting down at the end of the year or in your performance and comp meetings and saying, hey, Joe, you said you wanted to move into this next level of advisor. Here are the things we agreed that we would all do. We've done our part. Have you done X, Y, or Z? Oh, actually, I haven't. Sorry. Now it's not me keeping it from you. It's, did you meet the standard? And now we can objectively hold to a standard because we've taken the time and attention to actually clarify the standard for, here's what I want you all to do. Here's what I do. And it's the best part. When I write checks to people, and I love writing big checks to people, I always get excited about it, because I know that they earned it and they contributed in a way that I should be excited. And if I'm writing them a 10x bigger check, I'm doing more cartwheels. So if you're ever not clear about people's advancement, their comp, you're not feeling aligned or they're not feeling aligned, right? That comp plan and those career ladders are really where you're going to want to spend some time and energy. Tiff and Jared have shared all the updates they've made. So they've got a really cool view that shows how you move your way up the career ladder in that firm. Tiff, just in the interest of time, I'll show them, right? But you can see literally for each role, what's the key difference? What's the education? There's a lot of different sample formats. You can find the one that works for you, but notice in every sample, we're clarifying clarity, transparency, and accountability, so that we are operating from that same sheet of common language music. Here at Managing to Standards, people. So we've got obviously the different lessons and resources here, the priority lessons, the revenue modeler, the team track, the examples. There's loads of resources to really help you all apply this conversation in the library. So definitely, right, building a business dev process, building and managing teams, creating career ladders. So we wanted to give you the overview, sort of the umbrella view, so that you really understand purpose and culture and vision and really aligning and documenting and setting standards around that. Setting those standards around structural organization. What's the right people model to fit where we're growing into, right? Based on where you are. And then how do we make sure we've got the right people? There's lessons on hiring and training. Go watch those as you need. But this is really around, hey, we've got to make sure that we've got a comp plan and a career path that aligns people with us relative to the goals. And again, there are deeper lessons that really dive into those particulars. But we wanted to give you the overview of the kind of the building blocks for building and managing teams. And then you can each go deeper and reach out to us for support as you're implementing those ideas.